I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse, Professor Martin Trunn from Notre Dame University. Welcome, Martin.
It's a pleasure, as always, Michael.
Martin, this is the last podcast before the great WA state election. This is the WA election episode of View, Martin. Although I can't help but think it's a bit of an anticlimax. That having been said, it's only an anticlimax as I'm seeing it in the lower house and an absolute climax. And it's going to be a cliffhanger in the upper house, is my guess. But I want names, Martin. I want numbers. I want you to get off the fence. You know, there's a danger in your trousers being ripped to shreds if you stay on that fence. Let's start with the lower house. Is there any doubt about the Cook government getting back?
No doubt at all, I think. It'd be embarrassing if I'm wrong. But if you look at how all the polls are tracking, they're tracking with primaries in the 40s still. Now, they actually had a primary vote, an incredible primary vote of almost 60%. So they're going to come down from that really substantially. But look, there's about a 15, 16% swing, it looks like, against them on the primary, which just inevitably you're going to lose seats. And about the similar on two-party preferred. So, the reality is you're not going to see 2021 again, but it does. We are looking at, I think, a very comfortable Labor victory, nevertheless.
Martin, we'll never see, we hope, at least in our lifetimes, 2021 again, because it was all about COVID. It was all about Saviour Mark McGowan. It really wasn't a party election. It was sort of personalised into to one person, and he, of course, had a bete noire who came from Queensland and spent lots and lots of money on voting, and he seemed to have disappeared as well. But Martin, let's do a little exercise in numbers so our listeners know exactly where we stand. Sort of politics 101, lower house, Western Australia, the Legislative Assembly. How many members around our big state, and what's the current numbers? Forget the 60%.
There's 59 seats in the lower house. 53 of those 59 seats are held by the Labor Party. Just six non-Labor MPs, three Liberal, three National. So actually, four Nationals won and two Liberals won last time, but one defected to from the Liberals to the other way around, from Nationals to Liberals. So there's three and three. That's the how 53 versus three and three. So it's a just incredibly one-sided at the moment. But that I think you throw that away and start, on a different assumption, maybe around 2017, where Labor won 41 seats, Liberals won 15, and the Nationals won three. That's a little closer to where we're going to get, I suspect, this time around.
Let's work backwards from those numbers, Martin. The Nats, the Nationals, with three. I still can't help but call them a country party. They had more identity when they were, I thought. Probably some people in the Nationals would agree with me. But what seats will they win?
So they're starting with the three. They're a pretty good chance of picking up Warren Blackwood, probably. Labor certainly not conceding that, but that was the seat held by the Nationals. It was a fairly safe National seat before the last election. That was a bit of a shock loss. It's got sort of the Margaret River region, but also that Manjimup up Pemberton region and down through Denmark. That's Warren Blackwood.
If there are a little.
They are in a tough fight with the Liberals for the seat of Moore, which last time round was won. So actually it's a funny seat. It used to be two seats, Northwest Central and Moore, and now it's Midwest. And there's a tight fight between the Nationals opposition leader, Shane Love, and the defector from the Nationals to the Liberals, Ben Beard. So they're notionally on three. They could well get to five, but it's actually difficult to see them doing better than that.
Martin, if it were a repeat of the 2017 election, what seats would the Liberal Party hold? It'll all be in the metropolitan area, I suppose, possibly more as well.
It's the seats they lost last time. I think that's the seats you've got to look at. So starting from sort of by way of margin, you've got Churchlands, Nedlands, Kareen, Bateman, Scarborough, South Perth, Riverton. They're all gettable seats in the metro area. And then if you add in Geraldton, Albany, and Kalgoorlie, three regional centres. Geraldton's the most likely, probably Kalgoorlie's a little less likely, but still very, very much in the gun, I would have thought. I think a good chance. You start to get them back to a similar spot, and then you've got other seats like Kingsley, Dawesville, and Bicton, who are on bigger margins, but are still very much in the, Liberals are hoping to pick those up. So, that sort of gives you an idea of the seats that they're after.
I suppose if there were a big swing on, and I don't mean a ridiculous tidal wave swing against the government, but with a more moderate swing against them, some of those seats you just mentioned, right down to Bicton next to Fremantle, would be up for grabs.
Yeah, if they win those seats back, they're getting back to 2017 territory. And then there's more tough seats as well. I'll just read out a couple to them. You want the actual seats: Murray Wellington, Pilbara, Jandakot, Hillary's. I just can't see them, probably most of those going, particularly Hillary's and Pilbara. They're big margins. That's the kind of that's when you'd see the Labor alarm if they're winning those seats.
Martin, so everyone assumes the Cook government's back. There's at least three retiring Labor members who are ministers. People will be looking at their jobs and wondering who will get promoted to them. There'll probably be more thought about that on election night than anything else for some of them. What do you reckon?
As soon as it appears that there would be a Labor victory, the jockeying will start. The text messages, the phone calls, all of those sorts of things. It's important for people to remember in the Labor Party, their cabinet makeup is directly related to the makeup of their caucus, their party room. So until the dust settles around who's in and out in terms of seats, you won't know for sure exactly who's in and out of cabinet. So there's factions within the Labor Party. They select their candidates to go forward and for consideration, and they have more or less options depending on how many seats they win. So I think we've got to wait and see the dust settles there before we know exactly who might be in line for promotion.
John Quigley, Attorney General, is retiring. Sue Ellery and David Templeman, I think, are the three ones I had in mind particularly. It'll be interesting to see who comes through. It'd be good for the Labor Party to have some fresh faces.
I think you absolutely need to renew every time round, and the obvious time to do that straight after an election. So I'd expect there to be at least three changes, but well, we know there'll be three. That's stating the obvious, but I think they would be looking to make five or six, perhaps, to give, because you're talking about a number of quite a few MPs will be in their second term now, the ones that won in 2021, and there's some from 2017 desperate for an opportunity. So, I guess we'll see how that pans out post-election.
Martin, I'm thinking that the lower house, the government, might need to appoint an emissary to deal with the, well, could be quite a Bolshe sort of upper house after this election. Let's turn then to the upper house. Again, tell our listeners how many seats are up for grabs, how they get elected, what sort of support you need to get yourself a seat in the upper house, and then we'll start to break down what it might turn out to be.
So you've got 37 members being elected this time around. You do your sums, you need 19 for a majority there. The Labor Party, if they're polling in the low 40s, are looking at 15 to 16 seats. So that's short of a majority. Let's say that that happens. The Greens could get as many as five, probably more likely four, but you just don't know. That if they were to get four and say Labor got 15 or 16, between the two of them, they would have a majority. Whether they get to majority in their own is actually quite important because if they don't, every time they've got to find other votes elsewhere for support. Of course, if Labor and Liberal agree on things, then they'll get things passed. So you expect that Liberals will increase their numbers to double figures. The Nationals would likely win two. A poor performance would see them only get one, but I suspect they'll probably get two. And then you've got a smattering of other minor parties who have every opportunity of getting a seat. Just to recap how the upper house will work, you get 20% of the votes, you get 20% of the seats. You get 50% of the votes, you get roughly 50% of the seats. So it's a fairly simple system to follow in a way. So you get 1/37th of the vote, exactly, then you're guaranteed a seat, Michael, in a 37-seat chamber. So the actual quota for election technically is 2.63% of the vote. So it's not a big hurdle for minor parties, and you're likely to get a pluralist situation, lots of diversity probably in that house post-election.
Now, Martin, I don't sing your praises sufficiently often on this podcast, but you tell our listeners, many of them know this already, that you're one of the architects of the new system that operates in the upper house. So when you give us these figures, they're not because you're reading them off a screen; they're deeply embedded in your brain, Martin. Let's just do the maths. Say if there were 16 Labor, 4 Greens, we've got to 20. Got 17 seats in the upper house still on offer. So we got 10 Libs. Well, we're up to 30. Say you got 2 Nats, you're up to 32. Doesn't leave too many of the others: legalized cannabis, Animal Justice Party, Christians, Sustainability Party. There's so many of them. I was hoping there'd be a sex party, but there isn't, like there is in Victoria. There's a shooters party. I mean, how many of these are likely to get up? Have you got any idea?
Well, I'm only going off history, and probably last time round, the Legalised Cannabis Party would certainly get a seat and probably possibly in a running for a second based on their vote last time. Australian Christians, based on their vote, hasn't fluctuated an enormous amount, but even at 1 to 2%, they're a chance. So they're definitely two candidates. Some of the other ones who've hovered around 1%, like the Animal Justice Party. If they can improve a little bit, they're in the hunt. There's a few of them that don't have much pedigree, Michael, so it's a bit hard to tell how they might go in that respect. But of those 5 seats, there's certainly, Shooters, Fishers, Farmers, as they've had a fairly consistent record of election, but that's because they've mainly been elected from rural seats. They also put themselves forward as an acronym, SFFWA, and I'm not sure anyone knows what that actually is. So I reckon that was a bit of an own goal. And if they call themselves Shooters, Fishers, or something like that, people know what they stand for a bit more. So that might hurt their chances this time around. And then, of course, you wouldn't write off One Nation, Michael. There's a full smattering of views in the electorate. So all of these parties will be in the hunt.
And is dying with dignity a standing a candidate as well? I mean, that's a serious proposition, as well as most of them are. But sometimes there are people who just decide it seems like a good profession. Let's see if we can get into the upper house. Martin, let's come back to the logistics of all of this. You're going to be calling the election on 6 PR. I'll tune in just to see exactly where we are. But by what time of the night do you think that you and the other prognosticators will be prognosticating the result for the lower house?
Well, the results, well, coverage starts at 6, but results come in from about 6:30 onwards. And I would say within the hour, I'll be bold, within the hour, I think we might be calling this one, if it's sufficiently clear. And look, you go through, because there's actually a lot more to think about and consider. You mentioned the upper house. We may or may not get some early figures there. They tend to always count and put in the figures for the lower house first, but, we might get some indicative figures there, maybe. Maybe given the lower house voting, there might be some indications there. But also, a lot of the seats won't be very clear on the night. There'll be plenty that we'll have a bit more to say about once the night goes on. So there's a lot of specific details which will unfold as the night goes on, which should be really interesting.
So that's the lower house, but the other house traditionally, maybe it's going to be different this time with a different system. It looks simpler. Does that mean we'll get a quicker count?
In some ways, no. And the reason being that you've got postal votes. So the postal votes can trickle all in next week, as long as they've been sent before the poll. They trickle in next week. And what the WAC does is they wait for all the votes to come in. Then they press the button and allocate the preferences, and they'll spit out winners. So you won't get a result declared until later on. But what I can tell you under this system is we'll have a fair idea, because it's optional preferential voting. That's a deep, big technical term, but what it means is some people just put one in a box.
We're
Some
talking
people put
about
more
the upper house voting
in the
system.
upper house voting. So
Yeah.
don't confuse this with the lower house voting. We're talking upper house here.
And
In the upper house, you can just put one in your box above the line, or you can put one, two, three, four, and more. That means some people will just put one, and under the previous system, you could just put one, right, in the upper above the line. So what I suspect, with a high vote exhaustion rate, which means that people haven't allocated preferences, the seats will correlate pretty closely to the primary vote. Hope I'm not getting too technical to people here. So you'll have a fair idea, depending on the primary vote that you're seeing emerging in those parties, how many seats they'll win. Not a lot of seats will be decided by preferences.
back to the analysis you gave earlier, a simple approach to this is if you see in the lower house that the Labor Party is getting 40%, the Libs are getting X percent, the others are getting Y, Z, and so on, you can quickly translate them into the number of seats they'll have in the upper house.
So bring a calculator. This is my tip. Bring a calculator with you. Divide your party's vote by 2.63%, 2.63, not percent, and you'll get straight away a fair indication about how many seats your party has won. It's only going to be the last few seats that A, get decided by preferences, and B, if your party hasn't quite got to 2.63%, the last seats will be allocated to those that get closest. So, it's not too difficult to follow in that sense.
Martin, we're in Fremantle. There's been an interesting contest here. Community candidate seems to have a lot of visibility. Kate Hewlett running against a very well-established and minister, Simone McGuirk. We'll all be watching Fremantle. I must say, I'd be surprised if Labor lost the seat, but it's going to be interesting to see the contest. What are going to be the interesting seats for you? What will you be watching?
I'll be watching a couple of things. I will be interested in Fremantle. I'm interested to see what how many votes someone like Kate Hewlett gets, and see if that and whether how much the primary vote of Simone McGuirk drops, because it will drop, like all the Labor candidates will drop, because they're not getting 2021 results, and see if that indeed becomes a noticeable contest. I'm going to watch those seats I just mentioned. With a great deal of interest. I'm going to be looking very early to get a kind of sense of the overall swing, which will help me understand the picture. So
And which
looking
would
forward
be,
to it.
do you have a number one seat in a bellwether seat to give you that swing sense?
Oh, this sounds a bit boring for anyone in the local immediate area of Fremantle, but the seat of Kingsley is often won by governments. And it swung both ways to Liberal and Labor in quite a few years. It has a margin of 16.9%. If that seat falls to Liberals, that shows they're doing pretty well and have a reasonable night. Doesn't mean we'll see a change of government, but I think that's a bit of a litmus test to see how well they're going.
Mark, this has been a fascinating discussion. I'll let you go to sharpen your pencils and get all of your notes ready and have your various devices on hand for tomorrow night. And we'll be talking about the results, of course, next Friday. We've kept away from the federal elections today. No doubt they'll be announced on Sunday. And we've held back because too much happened. It's like a raging torrent, the Trump administration. But we'll come back and perhaps even do a special view midweek next week, if it seems like a sensible thing to do to assess just what's going on in the world under Trump. But thank you for joining me today.
It's a pleasure as always, Michael.